Welcome back to a new episode of The Rule of Three. I am Brian Miller, and on the other end, we've got Tim Slagle. It's two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking about a great show, Crash and Burn, that Tim and I are going to do together in a scant month from now. And also
a scant month. It is indeed a scant month.
Yeah, because we're it's under not a even, month it, just now.
Yep.
It's a February away.
Scant of a month? Scant of a month, I think, would be the...
Yeah, and... Talk a little running of the bulls, and because apparently the internet wants me to go there for some reason. But first, I want to tell you a weird story. You know, it's not every day that you find yourself embroiled in a heated argument with the sister of the star of the King of Queens... that spills over and turns awkward for Vikings punt return star Marcus Sherrills. It's not every day. But for me, wow. that day was yesterday.
I haven't had that day yet.
Apparently it's going around. It might happen to you tomorrow, for all we know. It's a trend. I was on so my buddy Cy Amendola, our mutual friend, Cy Amundsen. We do a sports podcast together, the Cy Amundsen Show. And we had our first really big... Well, not our first, but our biggest interview yet. We had a Viking star punt returner, Marcus Sherrills, in yesterday. And so I went in early to get ready for the recording, and there was another show taping in the podcast studio, a friend of mine, Bob Sansevier. And Bob said, well, pop on the mic, do a couple segments while you're here. So I said, okay. So I sit down next to a lady who looks vaguely
familiar.
You
just thought it was a lady, because in that podcast studio, you never really know who's – I think I've been in that podcast studio. You never really know who's there.
Yeah, you know, and this one, I mean, she was there in person, but she was right.
No, no, but I mean, even when people are there in person, you don't know that it's people come and go in the studio.
Right, and it's not like there's name tags or anything, you know? And so I gradually suss out that this is one of the sisters of King of Queens actress Leah Remini, who's probably most famous now as a recent anti-Scientology convert. You know, she got out of the church, and she has a reality show about her whole family and all of her sisters breaking away from Scientology. And Bob was asking us about the new immigration executive order and some other stuff. I forget how it even came up. It was kind of – I was sort of out of it. And Yeah. And at some point, I basically just said, like, well, I'm okay with stricter border control. We definitely need immigration policy sussed out. It's been kind of in weird limbo for years now. But I'm not necessarily a fan of, you know, deporting people with brain tumors and people who have been here for 35 years who were brought here when they were two. Ms. Remini said that she wanted all of the illegal Mexicans out of the country because she doesn't want her kids to get shot.
Oh, boy.
Which is a pretty hard to argue with statement, no matter what you put it behind. Like, if you're like, I don't think we should expand the Whole Foods parking lot. I don't want my kids to get shot. You know, like, we have to see Lego Batman and IMAX. I don't want my kids to get shot. It's like, well, yeah, fair point.
I think it's we have to see Lego Batman. I don't want my kids to shoot me.
So I
Daddy, I found your gun, and we're going to see Lego Batman.
And it will be in IMAX. And so I tried to kind of reasonably talk about policy with her, but at that point I was starting to lose my cool there. And then she said to me, and I think you'll find this especially interesting, she said, I really don't think you have any of your facts or sources straight, which is interesting. Because she was recently a Scientologist. Literally, you took the word of a science fiction writer that a 75-billion-year-old alien put evil spirits in volcanoes, and the only way we can stop it is painting Tom Cruise's garage.
Did you say that?
No. I actually
– oh, man.
I thought it, but like, I was so hung up on that Sherrills interview coming up. And Bob, I didn't want to. I'm trying to get some radio work in town, and I knew I was not going to be able to keep my cool. I just wasn't, and so I just stopped talking, and I just said, I'm all I can do is not talk because that's the only thing I can do that won't be wildly impolite. I just couldn't, And because it drove me nuts that she was like, she and her stupid sister, who I've heard on a recent interview, who's just a most loudmouth, obnoxious broad, was basically taking all these people to task for how smart she was for leaving Scientology. And what I really should have said to both of them was, you know what? It's not really a great point on the old resume to say, I'm no longer currently falling for a scam. Like, I don't think that's something to brag about. In fact, I think if you used to be a Scientologist, you should be forced to put that at the end of every opinion you state as like a caveat, no matter how simple. Like, if I say, how do you get to the State Theater in Minneapolis? You say, well, you go down to Washington, you take a right on Hennepin, and you'll get there. Although, keep in mind, I was a Scientologist.
Yeah, but they were both born into it, weren't they?
Yeah, well, so were the Mexican kids whose parents brought them into this country when they were two.
yeah, but you know, it's they both should be forgiven then. I mean, when you're raised into something, you can't necessarily see the flaws. I mean, it's much more difficult.
Yes, but I don't think you can cite the fact that you no longer participate in a widely discredited religion as some sort of verification of your truth-seeking powers.
Well, every religion's been widely discredited, though.
Yeah, but we got to admit that Scientology is, even amongst the cuckoo-y bird religions, super cuckoo birds. I mean, it's really, really daffy, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that.
And then the irony that she's now a super born again Christian type who justifies everything with Jesus talk. It's like, wow, you just replaced one thing with another, didn't you?
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Oh yeah, she's an inspirational. According to her Twitter bio, she's like a God first inspirational speaker.
It's who was it? I had read somewhere, and I think it was Lenin. And it was Lenin that said that he would much rather deal with Catholics than atheists. He said, because Catholics, you know that they believe in something wholeheartedly, and it's very easy to transfer that ideologies on them. Whereas if you have someone who's an atheist, he's a skeptic, and it's going to be very much more difficult to actually impose an ideology on someone who was already skeptical.
That John Lennon is smart. No, I think that's absolutely accurate. I mean, especially – I'm not going
to – Well, he was able to convince people that Yoko Ono was an artist.
So. That's true.
So, yes, he did know the ways of propaganda.
That's true. He's taking after his former – the other Lenin, I guess. But no, I think that's an interesting quote because, yeah, it's weird. You would think if somebody used to be fervently part of a religion, it would be especially hard to get them to be part of a different one. But maybe there's that mindset where you're like the empty vessel just needing to be filled up with something.
Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous burn through coffee machines at a
yes.
clip far greater than the average American. It's why this ashtrays outside of an AA meeting fill up quicker. It's the transference, it's part of the psychology that allows someone to be a Scientologist.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what bugs me about the notion that, like, you could be a Scientologist for that long and that has no impact on your credibility. Like, well, I'm not there anymore, so the slate is wiped clean. Kind of like when the Bush administration used to say, since September 11th, we've had no terror attacks on our watch. And you're like, that's impressive. I'm cool with that. I like that. But let's not – I don't know that we get to start on the 12th. I don't think that's kind of an awkward time to start, you know?
It's I do know that people who no longer believe in Catholicism that still keep a crucifix in the house just in case.
In case of emergency, break glass and pray.
Yeah, just in case they might have been might be wrong with their skepticism. And I wonder if the Scientologists also have a little emergency break glass in case of I forget the guy's name who's coming back. Isn't there somebody coming back?
Is Elrond supposed to come back?
Elrond's supposed to come. No, not Elrond. No, one of the guys from outer space is supposed to come back and rescue everybody or something. Or aren't they?
Oh, I don't know. But you know what? Maybe they can come back and rescue us from the end of the segment. And on the second segment of Rule of Three, we're going to talk European Tantalization. I just thought that sounded like a good album title. But we'll talk Crash and Burn here in the next segment. But first, I've been getting ads, and it took me – well, you're the one who figured this out for me. I was getting ads on my web browser for The Running of the Bulls, which is in July. So I was like, why am I being – why does the internet want me to run with the Bulls so badly? What does Steve Jobs know that I don't know? As you sussed it out, and I'm going on a European jaunt. In fact, we'll have to double record an episode of Rule of Three for my hiatus. I'm going to be gone for 8 days to Paris, France here for my 10-year wow. wedding anniversary.
Starting when?
It's going to be a tight schedule. Crash and Burn ends on a Saturday, and we fly out on a Tuesday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tight turnaround.
That is. That's going to be tight. And then you're going to be back on – there'll be a week from Wednesday, huh?
Yeah, I think we're gone from a Tuesday to a – we leave on a Tuesday and get back on a Wednesday, I think. I think that's how it works out. But yeah, we're going to be on there on our actual day for actual anniversary. I should be getting bonus points up the wazoo for this. On the day of our 10-year anniversary, I'm taking my wife to the Paris Opera House to see Carmen.
Wow.
Yeah, swanky.
Wow. Yeah. No. Yes. You should get husband points for that one.
Yeah, that's got to be some bonus points. But so I guess you know, my computer's like, hey, you're looking up European trips. Maybe you must want to run with some bulls. And that got me thinking. I can think of literally 10,000 things that I would like to do in Europe before running with bulls.
Well, what's interesting about that is when you first told me that was popping up. You know, my first speculation was that because they don't just – they used to go with your cookies. They used to actually go through the when you know, they decided – when a website decided what ads they should show you, they used to go through all your cookies to see where you've been. And that's why, you know, you might be looking at something at eBay and then you're on Facebook and all of a sudden you see exactly what you were looking at on eBay.
Right.
But they've actually gotten a little more sophisticated. They go after your IP address now. And that's why it's when I'm on the home network here, I can tell what my wife has been looking at because I'm seeing ads for shoes. I know she needs a new pair of shoes when all of a sudden I pull up my news site and there's an ad for some open-toed sandals.
It's funny. I've had the same experience with my wife. She does a lot of online shopping, and I'd be like, well, somebody was looking at jewelry and weird face creams today because Facebook is really into this right now. Would you ever –
Of course, that makes you you have to double think the private browsing.
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan of private browsing for a variety of reasons. Many of them not that nefarious. Just like, hey, you know, I just don't want anyone to know. I will private browse. Probably the main thing I use private browsing for, honestly, sadly, even more than like nudie pictures, is listening to like really embarrassing songs that I don't want my wife to know I was listening to on YouTube.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I'll be like, oh, she does not know that I listened to Electric Avenue 3 times in a row last night while I was drunk.
It's a good thing she doesn't listen to our podcast.
It's a very good thing she doesn't listen to any of my podcasts or go to my shows, quite frankly. It really would be a disaster for me.
So anyway, back to the running of the bulls. That's what when you first told me it was popping up, that was my thing. Well, maybe your wife. I didn't know you were going to Europe. We had not discussed the podcast schedule for that for the month of April yet. And so I thought maybe your wife was planning on a trip to Europe.
True.
Or you know, if the running of the bulls came up. Maybe she was devising a murder plot.
Sure, or she'd been looking up running shoes and Angus steaks. Google just put it all together.
Because that actually would be an excellent murder she wrote.
Ooh, that actually would be a really good way to get somebody
is stabbing someone with a bullhorn than throwing him out a hotel window as the bulls go by.
That's a little Sherlock Holmes action there. I like that. You know, it's funny. Everybody thinks that is this, like, an exotic thing, but I'm used to living in a trailer and on farmland in the middle of southern Illinois, and I was like, I've run from bulls already. It's not that fun. There were just cows in the field, and they would chase us when we crossed the field, and it was scary. That's about all.
I would guess running of the bulls would probably be top 10 bucket list items. If you actually pulled everyone's bucket list item, it would probably be rated between skydiving and John Bon Jovi.
Having sex with or listening to?
What?
John Bon Jovi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to do before I die, is actually listen to a John Bon Jovi album.
Well, that way you're ready for death. It's just very handy. Yeah, and I think you're right, though. Like, I would like to skydive. But the running of the bulls thing, for whatever, it just seems like the most weird vestigial European tradition.
I thought I wanted to skydive, and my first tech guy, the first guy that that set me up with a web with a remote server and everything, died skydiving.
Really?
He'd been doing it, he had been doing it for 30 years. It's I was calling, and I got his assistant, and his assistant helped me through the issue I was having. And then he said, oh, yeah, and I should probably tell you, is he's no longer with us.
Apparently she couldn't help him with the issue he was having.
Yeah. It's, wow. It's apparently, yeah. He had waited a little bit too long to pull the cord.
So what happens when you wait too long?
It's just the chute opens, but it doesn't. It has no ability to slow you down in time.
Oh, okay. So you basically it's not like if you go, you're going, say, too fast. It's that you're going too fast for your particular altitude at that moment.
You're going too fast for the matter that you're made out of.
Right. So he didn't hit the ground like he just fell out of a plane, but he also didn't hit the ground like he was floating toward it either.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. It's so yeah. And he said and I said, wow, that's horrible. And he said, nah, it was horrible for, you know, up until about the last 30 seconds, he was probably having the time of his life. So
yeah.
But what a, you know, what a, he was actually with him when it happened. So
wow.
they actually had to drive back without him.
Wow.
So that you know, when someone that's that experienced, you know, doesn't, you know, we think to ourselves, well, it's got to be kind of safe. I mean, people have been doing it forever, and it's like, yeah, but it's still not entirely safe. I mean,
yeah.
there's still glitches in everything.
I got one for your bucket list. All right, we get you in a parachute, right? And you jump out of the plane, and then we have three bulls on parachutes coming right behind you.
That would actually be a funny cartoon.
That would be
it's a guy coming down with two bulls behind him as they went, two bucket list items, one stone.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I don't know about the running of the bulls. I don't like running.
That's the thing, is I like running, but I like listening to my music and peacefully jogging. I don't necessarily want there to be livestock in pursuit.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, is it? Do you think it's actually the running that people want to be able to do, or do you think it's the ability to go home to the United States with the scarf and the beret and say, "Guess what I did last week?"
Oh, I think it's that, and I think what people really want to do is have the bull run past them and then get drunk and have sex with somebody else who was just there. You know, I really think it's just the adrenaline rush of the moment, the excuse that adrenaline rush provides you to do whatever you want to do.
Huh.
It's like, it's like putting yourself in a tiny little combat situation, basically, right? Like, super briefly.
So you actually think that there is a thrill that people are going for.
Yeah, I do. And, I think you're also right that there's a lot of people. I bet there's a lot of people who technically run with the bulls, but, like, you know, you start right near the finish line, you know, like, oh, I think I heard a moo in the distance, and you hurl yourself under a cafe table and tell everybody. I don't know that everybody's necessarily literally up alongside the beasts.
Well, I think if you have the beret, scarf, and shirt with a little rip in it concession,
mm-hmm.
I would bet there's a lot more of those sold than actual participants.
Yeah, a couple of hoof prints and dust on the back that somebody stomped on there just to... I think you're absolutely right.
We're on the final segment of the Rule in Three. Brian Miller was the first person to know that he's going to be part of my annual comedy series at Acme Comedy Company in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Crash and Burn.
And I was the first person to know, by the way, because I got you to promise me I could be on it when you were really drunk on scotch about a year and a half ago. I knew you were a man of your word and a man of your scotch, and I figured I could parlay that.
Oh, yeah. Scotch promises, huh?
I think the whole thing was conceived over scotch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so as well. For our listeners who might not know what Crash and Burn is, I hope you all do. If you don't, check it out. We're on Facebook. We have a Crash and Burn page. We have a Crash and Burn 6 event page. That's Crash and Burn V1 is how it's done. What Crash and Burn is, well, it's a bunch of things. I guess to get to the logistics of it, it is four comics writing a show together over the course of a week. Yeah. And we start on Tuesday, and each of us is expected to perform 20 minutes of material that has never been done on stage at any point.
Yeah, you can never have spoken it aloud. Basically, you can write it down.
That is allowed.
If we're talking, like, and I have an idea, of course, it's fine.
If it's a story that you've told that you said, you know, I've always thought this would be a nice bit. Yeah, that's fine. It can never have been done on stage as a bit.
Which I think for a lot of people don't necessarily know that, like, even a story that works really well in conversation, to turn it into a stage bit still requires a decent amount of processing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And open mics and practicing are essential to that processing. So none of that is very different.
Right. So the four of us sit down together. It's we all watch each other's acts and what they've been doing, and then we spend our off hours when we're not working on our own. We spend it giving each other suggestions and writing taglines and helping each other polish that 20 minutes to the point where on Saturday night we should have a brand new 90-minute show. It kind of reminds me in a way of what Saturday Night Live does. For
example. I was just gonna say that. It's funny you say that. It's like the stand-up comedy version of SNL.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, but we don't have 700 writers and 300 performers. It's just
right.
Four. It's just four of us. So what it reminds me more of is probably Sid Caesar's Show of Shows when I have no idea how many writers they had. But, you know, I know that the Dick Van Dyke Show, which was based on that.
Right.
There was just Buddy, Sally, and Rob.
Yeah. Well, Sid Caesar had what? They had Dick Cavett and Woody Allen writing for him, right?
Right. So I have no idea how many writers that Mel Brooks, I thought, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Mel Brooks.
But I have no idea how many writers at one time were actually working for Alan King, your Show of Shows. But it's in my imagination of how that actually was is how this actually is. I mean, it's if you go on Saturday night, you see a show that's only a week old. If you go on Tuesday night, you see a show that's never been done before.
And if you go on Saturday and Tuesday and Saturday, you can see, and I think a lot of people do this, you can see what it looks like when something basically is a lump of clay being roughly formed into a vase. And then hopefully by Saturday night, it's a very nice looking vase.
Yeah, Absolutely. And if you, you know, if you like that scene in Ghost, you could actually sit there. You could come in every night and see the see the entire shaping. You could see as that clump of mud starts moving up on the wheel and then going back down into a pot and see every step of progression. So it's sort of in freeze frame because you're not there at lunch with us.
Yeah. I guess you could be.
Some of you might be. Of you might be. That has happened before. We've had guests inputting stuff.
I did some writing.
You actually helped out the week we had Kostaki and Ross Bennett and Andy Smith. Is that correct?
Yep. And I think I might have come out for the Emily Galati one too. I know I worked with Emily on her stuff, because Emily and I write together.
Right.
Emily had a very brief. Someone dropped out, and she only had like a week's notice, I think. Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Whereas you know, I've known I've been doing it for a while, so I've been squirreling away some material. My new stuff is a bit embargoed at the moment, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, every time I see Emily, she does not give that chance not to mention that she kind of got gypped.
Oh, because she wants to do it again. She's trying to get in the front of the line as one of the first repeats.
Well, actually, yeah. Actually, everybody wants to do it again. It's a tremendous week. Comics that have done it tell me that it's, you know, I've had some comics will tell me that it is the best week they've ever had in comedy. That they enjoy it so much. And what it kind of reminds me of is a comedy festival, because you go to the comedy festivals and you see guys, because, you know, normally when you're working, you just work with the same, you know, you work with somebody who's, you know, only been doing it a couple of years and somebody that maybe has only been doing it a couple months
when you're
on the road. So somebody that's at your level, you never really get to see. But when you go to the festivals, you see the other people on your level, and it's a lot of fun. And if it were not for all the showbiz crap that goes along with a festival, festivals would be delightful.
Yeah,
and that's what I like to call this, is the smallest comedy festival.
Nice, and we've got some good people on the bill. We should mention the two other comics.
Yeah, we have Patrick Keane, who's also been on Late Night with Craig Ferguson, like yourself, and Martha Kelly, who is the breakout star in the FX TV series Baskets.
Yeah, and apparently I've heard just a really distinctive, sharp joke writer.
Yeah. Both her and Patrick are really solid on the one-line jokes.
Yeah,
so it's going
to
be.
It's ideal for me because I know Patrick pretty well, and I don't know Martha at all. So it's great. I get to meet somebody brand new, and I get to see an old buddy.
Yeah, it's. I've never worked with Patrick or Martha before.
Hmm.
They were both recommended to me as comics that would be perfect for it, and I noodled around the internet a little bit and agreed with their. Recommendations and here we are. I say this every year, but I think this is going to be one of the most fun weeks ever. I would highly recommend, if you love comedy, if you love improv, because there is an aspect of improvisation to it. People have been trying to merge stand up and improv for decades. I think it started because Second City was around the corner from Zany's in Chicago, and there used to be like Cubs and Sox, where improv and stand up where they hated each other.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, especially over the past 20 years, is when the amalgam started to happen. When improv artists would actually try stand up, and stand up artists would actually try improv. Is the amalgam started? But I mean, there still was segregated.
Or as I like to think of it, improv people would come do terrible stand up, and then the stand ups would go have sex with people who do improv. In my experience, that's usually how it works out.
You are probably correct on that, but But, you know, in the meantime, it has been attempted comedy slash, you know, merging improv and comedy in different formats has been attempted. I would like to believe that my Crash and Burn show is more than any other show merges improvisation with comedy, with stand-up comedy.
Yeah, and the thing I think is cool about it is there's a lot of these shows that will do everybody has to write a couple minutes on a theme, or they're kind of like almost like games, and you do jokes, and so there's like improv stand up merging, but you never actually use any of that stuff again because it's so situational. Whereas in Crash and Burn, if you're focused and you're doing a good job, you finish that 20 minutes and you've got a new chunk of an act.
And I would like to point out that all those little shows, mm-hmm. if you actually look at the timeline of them, mm-hmm. you will learn that Crash and Burn predates them all.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the original. This is the show that started the format that's sweeping the nation. Maybe Setlist might have been before us.
But Setlist is a great example, and I've done a knockoff version of Setlist, and it is really fun. But like, I didn't get anything out of it other than a fun show. I didn't leave with any of that. I recorded it, but I couldn't. You know, it was based on something like, you know, Donkey Parachute or something like that. And you're like, all right, you know, I'm not going to keep doing that in clubs. But no, my goal is for my new Crash and Burn set to be the beginnings of just a whole new set.
And I guess we haven't mentioned yet, it's April 4th through 8th at Acme Comedy Company, 612-338-6393. That is where you can do it. You can find it on my webpage along with all these episodes. They're also on iTunes.
Yep, and I will probably promote the hell out of it on Twitter and on my Facebook page, so look me up, and on my website, so Brian Miller Comedy, and Real Brian Miller with a Y on Twitter.
And if you're not familiar with the show, that's our traditional sign-off. See you next week.
See you next week.